Hello, and welcome to Season 8 of the Canadian Women's Foundation podcast, All Right, Now What? Gender equality and justice, where we live, work, learn, and play, is the goal, and it makes life better for everyone. All Right, Now What? Remains a space where we ask, how do we move from awareness to action? But this season, we're also shifting the story. Through powerful storytelling, expert interviews, and bold conversations, we'll explore what true equity can look like, especially for those who are too often silenced or overlooked. The work of the Canadian Women's Foundation and its partners takes place on traditional First Nations, Inuit, and Métis territories. We are grateful for the opportunity to meet and work on this land. However, we recognize that land acknowledgements are not enough. We need to pursue truth, reconciliation, decolonization, and allyship in an ongoing effort to make right with all our relations.
Hi, I'm Munira Abukar from the Canadian Women's Foundation. Today, we're joined by Esther Anyolu, a trauma-informed care counselor, educator, and founder of the Women's Multicultural Resource Counseling Center of Durham. In our conversation, Esther shares how her lived experience as an immigrant woman and decades of frontline work shaped her commitment to building culturally responsive, survivor-centered supports for women and gender-diverse people. We talk about what it truly means to work from an intersectional, anti-racist, and feminist lens, and why addressing violence requires looking beyond a single issue to the full social and economic realities women are navigating today. Esther also reflects on her role at the Women's Multicultural Resource and Counseling Center of Durham, including how community-led solutions, cooperative models, and collective care can foster safety and long-term resilience. Good morning, Esther. Thank you for joining me on our episode of All Right, Now What? I want to start off with some questions, but I want to say first to you, happy Black History Month, my sister. For listeners who are meeting you for the first time, who's Esther? Who's WMRCC? What is the Women's Multicultural Center all about? Maybe you can let us know a little bit more about that.
Okay. I think I will start with the Women's Multicultural Resource and Counseling Center of Durham. Before I get into myself, Women's Multicultural Resource and Counseling Center of Durham is an organization, a registered charitable organization established in 1993 to provide trauma-informed care counseling services and programs that will be culturally responsive to women of all ages, youth, children, newcomers, immigrants, asylum seekers, gender diverse women, women with disabilities, and also any other woman that needs the service. WMRCC does not turn anybody away. We see also Indigenous women. We see also Canadian, Caucasian women. So no woman is turned away. Anybody that knocks at the door, we help that person. And WMRCC provides services to women from diverse cultures, backgrounds, and the intent is to eradicate violence, to enable them to rebuild their lives, and to become contributing members of society. All women and all service recipients, regardless of their social identity, have equitable access to our programs and services. And WMRCC works from the intersectionality of gender-based analysis plus to and client-centered to work with these individuals who turn to us for support. And for myself, Esther Anyolu, I am a woman, immigrant woman, and I'm a Canadian citizen, originally immigrated to Canada from Nigeria some years ago. I am a mother, I am a wife, I am an auntie, I am a friend, I am a colleague. I am a lot of things. I can describe myself, and I work in the field of gender-based violence, supporting women, supporting gender diverse, supporting women with disabilities, supporting children, youth, anybody who comes to WMRCC, and I do this work with a team of dedicated, passionate team members and also board of directors who are committed to the mission of the organization and volunteers who give their times without looking back. So that's who Esther Nyolo is.
There's definitely, I know a lot about, more about you, Esther, that we can get into. So I'm really excited to unpack that because I know you're definitely all those fierce things that you're mentioning. Take us back to the beginning, Esther. What was the problem and what was the solution you were trying to kind of achieve when WMRCC was first imagined?
I used to live in Scarborough and moved to Durham region with my family. When we moved to Durham region, I noticed that the issues of gender-based violence was not in the radar as it was in Toronto. And I said to myself, having experience in this field, having been working in this field, I would like to establish something or do something in this community. So I met with the Durham Regional Police Services chief back in the day. I met with the executive director of the Dennis House and the executive director of the YWCA Toronto to introduce myself and told them about myself and my intent to start something in the Durham region. Within that period also, there was a study being done in Durham region by a woman called Barbara Rader and her associates. So two of us connected, and Barbara said to me, when I told her whom I introduced myself to her, she said to me, "Esther, I would like to engage you in this study that I got funding to do." It was a research. It was called Four County Community Report, and it was for Durham Region, Lindsay, Peterborough, and Haliburton. So she asked me to be one of the analysts to conduct a focus group with newcomer women, immigrant women, and racialized women who experience intimate partner violence or gender-based violence. I was able to approach those women's services shelters and advertise in the local community newspaper, indicating that we needed women to participate in this focus group. So this focus group, we had a series of focus group. Then WMRCC didn't have an office. We are doing the focus group in my house. So we did a series of focus group. After this focus group, we put a report together, which we had also community consultation. There were also women working in Haliburton, working in Peterborough, working in Lindsay, all the areas this study covered. We all came together, put all the findings, the data we collected, information the women shared with us during those times we did focus group. And the women who participated in the consultation sessions, Kay and myself conducted, indicated to us that they were facing a lot of barriers and challenges about people not using culturally responsive services to work with them, and also people not knowing much about them. So they were requesting, they wanted a shelter and a counseling center to be established to support them and fill this gap. So I explained to them running a shelter wasn't that easy. It would take a while and a lot of process. I said to them, let us start with the counseling center because that one was more feasible, more what we could do. So we started with establishing a counseling center. And most of those women become the first board of directors. The organization was then called Women's Rights Action Coalition of Durham. But we continue to hear from women that when they hear Women's Rights Action Coalition of Durham, they didn't realize we provide direct services. So the board of directors in 2003 decided to change the name to Women's Multicultural Resource and Counseling Center of Durham. And the intent from our original point, because it came out of the voices of women who participated in the focus group, was to establish a counseling center that we deal with the trauma, intergenerational trauma, and current trauma they experience, and other systemic issues they've been experiencing. So that's why WMRCC was started. Then over the years, the organization began to realize after these women, after supporting them, they would need to be economically dependent to enable them to take care of themselves and their children. And we started to introduce economic empowerment, economic advancement. And we were doing a lot of projects, skill development projects, resume writing, workplace ethics. And in 2017, we started the cooperative development project, which Women Canadian Women's Foundation is our esteemed funder for that initiative. Now, the first cohort was the Ontario Trillium Foundation when we developed 7 cooperative groups. And this time around, we are being funded by the Canadian Women's Foundation, and we have developed 6 cooperative groups.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely going to get more into those cooperatives. I think it's a great segue conversation. But, you know, hearing this and just hearing where you started, and for me, knowing where you started, I think, you know, WMRCC, when you let me know, started with around 7 women. And now today you're serving over, I think it's 135 members. What story does that growth talk about, you know, to the woman that you serve and the gaps that you're navigating? Like, what does that speak to you in terms of that story of growth? Because it's a huge, huge success to go from, you know, single digits to over close to 200 women. You know, what does that story of growth say about you and the work you do?
I know. This growth reflects both the scale of need within the target communities and the effectiveness of WMRCC's structure, a capacity building approach. The women we serve are primarily immigrants and racialized women. We help them to navigate the system, breaking the barriers they face, and filling the gap in access to stable employment, business knowledge, financial literacy, and digital skills required for economic participation. WMRCC addresses these gaps through a phased project implementation model that combines training, mentorship, and hands-on application. Core intervention, which includes structured training on business plan development, cooperative governance, financial management, and risk management, and also with a legal entity who advises them on how they can work as a partners in a business to prevent one person taking ownership of the business one day. So we provide them with all these skills, and I'm so happy for the work. And I give credit to my team member, Aisha, who is the project coordinator of this project. She has worked so hard, because when she took over, as you mentioned, we had only 7 women. Then when she came on board, she was able to grow the project, recruited a lot of women who have been successfully developed their own cooperative groups. And last time you were in our office, before the holiday, we showed you their different websites they've developed. So they are ready to run their businesses. And I'm so proud of them, because majority of these women, we are women who came to Canada in 2023. Some of them, we are the asylum seekers. And so I am so proud of them. They work so hard. Even in a snowstorm, these women, we have the courage to come for training scheduled for them. And they have been there doing whatever they need to do to make sure they run successful businesses. And WMRCC, just like the previous cohort we developed, WMRCC will not leave them. We will be there to support them all the way, to guide them to achieve their goals.
Thank you, Esther. I appreciate that. I think, I'm definitely going to ask you more about Aisha and about the women who are walking through your doors. But, you know, for folks who don't understand, the day-to-day, what does a co-op actually look like in a real life day at WMRCC? Can you paint a picture for the folks who are listening to us right now for what a co-op actually stands for, what that could look like on a day-to-day operation?
In real life situation, a worker cooperative at WMRCC operates as a structured, supportive, and outcome-oriented space. On a typical day, members arrive with varied responsibilities and schedules, and activities are organized around a clear agenda aligned with project timelines and deliverables. The day may begin with a facilitator providing a session focused on cooperative development priorities, such as business planning, governance, or risk management. Members review action items, discuss progress, and identify next steps. This is followed by skills development activities, which may include training on financial management, professional communication, technology use, website development, or social marketing strategies. Throughout the day, space encourages open dialogue and collaboration, and women feel that this is my space. I belong in this environment. We make them to feel safe, to feel welcome, to be able to express their opinions, to be able to contribute to the decisions we are making regarding the cooperative group, just like any other program and services WMRCC runs. We always try to engage the service users in some of the decisions and majority of the decisions that we make concerning them. So we give them that room and they come there, they relax, they feel comfortable, and they talk to us and it reflects on lived experiences they have had. And this approach strengthens them, build trust and support their relationship development among other participants, help them to build confidence, help them to connect with other women, like-minded women, and so on and so forth. WMRCC staff, facilitators and mentors are present to provide guidance, technical support, and monitoring. They ensure activities remain aligned with project objectives and cooperative principles. Sessions may be delivered in person and sometimes virtually. The other day, we had incredible weather. We had to move them from 7 a.m. We started messaging them because we have a platform too, where all of us are, and we communicate there, telling them, okay, we've moved the in-person session to virtual session. By the end of the day, members leave with clear next steps, assign responsibilities, and increase capacity to contribute to their cooperatives. The space functions not only as a training environment, as I mentioned to you before, but also as a collaborative workplace where women transition from individual participation to collective ownership and leadership.
I mean, you speak so well about it, Esther. And I think, from our conversations, it really highlights to me, how focused and caring you are on the woman who you serve. But you spoke a little bit about it, but before WMRCC, many of these women were isolated and new to Canada. They're navigating racism. They're navigating asylum systems. They're navigating economic precarity. What changes when they enter a room built for them? What do you see in terms of those changes?
WMRCC has policies, mandates, mission, and criteria, including principle, how we want to work with women. Recognizing that these women carry a lot of trauma with them. So, in working with them, we have to bear that in mind. They are coming to us sometimes presenting intimate partner violence, gender-based violence, or they are coming to us presenting, I need housing, I need employment, I want you to help me with immigration. But when you start working with them, they unpack some other things. What they have experienced from the time they were children and from the time they were teenagers and from the time they become adults. So we bear that in mind. We demonstrate sensitivity and around the questions we ask them. We develop sensitivity around their experience, knowing that they carry a lot of trauma and we don't want to re-traumatize them. Yeah, it upsets me when women, you work with them and they tell you, I went there, or I'm there with this person, this is my experience. So we have to be conscious the way we work with them. And I always say that to my team, we need to be careful. And in the work we do, service users always have the right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've explained it beautifully, right? What's interesting to me is, Esther, that you know the work that you and your team do, it sits at the intersection of a lot of things. It sits at the intersection of migration, at gender justice, economic survival. How do you explain that, to someone who's never had to think about those intersectionalities? How do you explain what your work is to someone who's never had to think about what it means to survive based off of gender, migration, you know, economic precarity? How do you go about doing that?
It can be challenging to explain all of those to people who have never been exposed to the topic or the work we do as women's organization or feminists. And my work and the work of WMRCC focus on intersectionality of migration, gender justice, economic empowerment, and social justice. This analysis is based on holistic and feminist approach of working with women from diverse backgrounds, dealing with precarious issues, immigration hurdles, systemic barriers, inequality, and structural and systemic issues, including poverty. So all these issues intersect with each other. That's what our organization and other organizations similar to us, we always say we work with people, service recipients, from holistic approach. That holistic approach means that when those individuals, women, youth, children, gender diverse, and all those women and individuals come to us presenting violence, we do not look at only violence. We have to look at other issues that impact their life, their social identity, which can include their gender, gender expression, sexuality, age, religion, language, geographical area they live, because also people experience discrimination based on where they live. And we have to acknowledge that most often people don't include it, but we know from the work we do, people are being discriminated based on their geographical area, education, income. So all these factors we need to consider.
Yeah, and you know, I've been really fortunate, Esther, you know, to understand the work because I myself as a Black woman experience it. But I think the interesting thing is, you know, feminism for us, regardless of how we believe on it in the spectrum, often it gets framed as like social or cultural work. But clearly your leadership and what we're hearing back shows that it's also deeply economic work and deeply economic in its experience. And so I guess the question I have is, you know, for you and your work and, you know, as a person, what does feminist economics mean in practice for you and the woman that you're serving? And I've had the pleasure of hearing it, you know, particularly for the harder experiences that you and Aisha have had, you know, navigating around it. But I think for folks listening, you know, what does that feminist economic practice mean for you and the folks who are working in these co-ops on a daily basis?
Feminist economics mean addressing gender pay gap, occupational segregation, and how economic policies affect women or women-identified individuals, gender-diverse individuals, indigenous, newcomers, immigrant women, and groups, apart from women, also other people, marginalized group or people, term equity-seeking groups. Gender justice means that we will continue to put this on the agenda and advocate for policy change, and also to support individuals who belong to this group, who come to us with their identified needs, to make sure those needs are met, and to try to eliminate barriers that prevent them from having access to community resources and participating fully and having that sense of belonging to their communities, to eliminate all those barriers and seasons people experience as individuals, as members of society, as members of their community. So that's what gender justice means to me.
Sure. Speaking of the economic justice and that feminist economics, I think, I really want to ask, I am privileged. I think that's going to be the theme of this episode, that as I'm privileged to experience and see it from you, in lifetime. But for folks listening, I really want to question a little bit more about what made you the kind of leader who doesn't just build programs. I think, Esther, as a person, you stand in the way of systems that harm. I also know from personal experience, I'm really fortunate to know this about you, that you also walk at the forefront of systems and systems of change in a healing form. And so, really the question is, in a long way, I'm asking it, while also flattering you because it's also true, how are you and other brilliant Black women leading change and rewriting the scripts and systems, particularly when it comes to Canada's co-op sector?
I think as a leader, as a woman working in the field, our role is to always look at what exists around us, who is represented and who is missing on the table. Always have to work towards equitable practices, making sure that everybody is included. I do not appreciate excluding people. So we want to make sure that everybody is included. And also, especially certain women, like Black women, racialized women, indigenous women, Muslim women, and all those equity deserving group, they complain about systemic issues that prevent their participation. How can we minimize or eliminate those systemic issues that pose as a barrier for their participation? And also always pushing for policy change, policy amendment, believing in what you believe in. Okay, yeah, believing, and also I will not say fighting, but advocating for your rights and for the rights of those people you provide service to. Because those people, you spend time hearing their pains, hearing what they have gone through, hearing about the trauma they experience in their countries of origin. They also carry those traumas with them, migrating to Canada. So our goal is to help them to overcome those traumas, as opposed to causing more harms. So in terms of cooperative women and also Roscas women, which you belong to, and also your lovely mother, with Rosca women, they all talk about, and they Rosca system is what is called susu or collecting chana. It has name in different cultures. It's about people getting together, especially women tend to practice this, and a collective, a group of individuals who agree with each other and set up terms on how they will be running this susu. It's alternative form of banking. And so these women, they could be 10 or 20, and they can say, oh, each month, each and every one of us, we contribute $100. And they take turn in collecting the fund. Or sometimes they will not collect the fund. They will say, we will use the money. When the money gets to this amount, we will use it to purchase a car, purchase a home, do something tangible for that group. So it all depends. And those women, the challenge they face and the harm caused to them is when they go to the bank to deposit those money and they want to know where they collect that money. Seeing somebody showing up at the bank with a huge sum of money, sometimes they might involve the legal authorities to thinking it was a drug money. We've had it from some of the women who participate in this alternative banking system called Roscas.
Yeah, I think, you know, for folks who are listening in, to explain a little bit more about Roscas, that system of rotating savings and credit associations and finance, I think you really speak about how systems that we had, you know, even before we came to Canada, systems that existed for us in our home countries, and have existed for thousands of years, probably amongst our communities, informal banking really sounds like, you know, you're taking the co-op spirit of what it means to not just share a co-op space for work, but talking about shared resources, right, and finances. And that for me is, you know, it's also where we also met through, which was really interesting because it tells you that, you know, when you have a sense of community and connection, you know, and that deep sense of trust with even financials, you know, it really becomes a bigger thing. And so it's beautiful to hear, you know, your use of Roscas and that system of financing, you know, with susus, ayuta, hugbed, called a lot of different things, box hand, a lot of things. So if you're, you know, yeah, I'm hoping for folks listening, maybe they can drop in some comments later on what they call a Rosca in their country, and in their language. So I really, you know, that's a lovely way. You know, this year, I'm really fortunate. Again, you know, we started off by saying to each other, you know, Happy Black History Month. But to get a little deeper into it, you know, this year's Black History Month theme is essentially honoring Black brilliance across the generations, from nation builders to tomorrow's visionaries. And as a Black woman yourself, you know, as a Black woman myself, was really fortunate to be chatting with you today, Esther. Building futures, yeah, we're building these futures in real time. You know, what does that theme mean to you, and what is the legacy that you're hoping to leave for women coming after you? I think, you know, when we heard about who Esther is in the beginning, you know, you're a mother, you're a wife, you're an auntie, you're a mentor, you are a good colleague, you're a good friend. What does that mean for Esther as a personal legacy? But what does it also mean for WMRCC as a legacy, you know, built by a Black woman or run by a Black woman? What do you hope to leave behind?
I hope to leave behind a legacy. Letting those young ones coming after us, you should not allow anybody to define whom you are. You always need to be proud of whom you are. You always have to be proud of your heritage. You always have to believe in yourself. Nobody is perfect. We have to acknowledge that. And when you make mistake, acknowledge your mistake and make amend to it, to prevent it from happening. And believe in yourself, believe in what you can accomplish, and don't allow people to put you down. Whether you are of darker skin, whether you are tall, short, bigger, slim, whatever, whether you speak with an accent, Love yourself for whom you are. Believe in yourself. And for me, Black brilliance means greatness and thriving despite systemic racism and barriers that we might face, celebrating resilience, talent, and significant contributions of Black individuals in all fields, and uplifting each other and uplifting our community by inspiring others and breaking the grounds. And also to believe whatever anybody choose, whatever field you want to be, what matters is you focusing on it and doing it well. We all cannot be medical doctors. We all cannot be lawyers. We all cannot be engineers, IT personals. So whatever you are, any field, even if you are a garbage collector, you are washing dishes in a restaurant, be proud of yourself because you are working, you are putting effort, you are making income. Be proud of yourself, whatever you are doing, because these days people tend to judge people based on their profession, the work they are doing. As long as that person is not stealing, we need to encourage that person. Whatever you are doing, do it well. So that's what matters. That's what counts. So that's what I want to leave you with that. And as Black people, we tend to get judged. We get to receive or get stereotype, discrimination. People judge us on whom we should be or how we're supposed to behave. We don't need to accept that. I am conscious about that, knowing that I am a Black woman, not only a Black woman, I come from continental Africa. Knowing that people will be harsh on me if I conduct myself in a certain way. Even when you haven't done anything, people still frame, make up stories about you to be telling. So those kind of things, we need to be conscious, leave that legacy, whatever we do. Encourage the younger ones coming before us, mentor them, help them to be proud of their heritage, help them to be proud of whom they are. Help them when they are feeling that, I can't do it. Encourage them. You can do it. All you need to do is to try. And if you try and fail, try again. Continue trying until you get it right.
It's beautiful, Esther. It makes me think of, just really quickly to share with you, I've been having really good conversations with my fellow Black sisters and just friends. And I think a quote that's come up a lot for me this year is by a beautiful Black author named Octavia Butler, who says, I began writing about power because I had so little. And that makes me think of all the action that you're taking to do all this. And so first and foremost, I want to thank you for your time, your energy, your spirit, and for all the good things that we were able to chat about today. But I also wonder if we can get some parting words for you, because as I think about that line about writing about power because you had so little, I think about taking action because we feel like sometimes we are actionless or helpless. And so there's a bit of a tradition happening at All Right Now What. And so I guess the question I would ask for you is, how can each of us take action and get involved to support gender justice?
There are different ways we can all get involved. There is room for everybody. Every now and then we organize a project or a program called Engaging Men as Allies. And everybody, when it comes to gender justice, when it comes to issues of intimate partner violence, gender-based violence, everybody needs to be involved because it is no longer women's issue. It is a community issue and community concern. And lately, after the COVID, many regions, many communities started declaring intimate partner violence as epidemic. And we need to think globally and act locally. Intimate partner violence happens in all over the countries. No society, no country will say, oh, it doesn't happen in my neighborhood, it doesn't happen in my society or country. We need to think globally and act locally within your community, make impact, support the work different organizations and communities are doing in this area, be an ally, spread the word about the work being done. Support by becoming a volunteer, a board member, join advisory committees, assist with fundraising, and when you cannot, recommend them to other people who could support them. That kind of thing. So we need to collectively work together to tackle issues facing us as communities. So that's what we need to live with this.
Thank you for helping shift the story on safety, leadership, justice, power, and rights. You can visit CanadianWomen.org today to learn more and stay connected. We believe everyone should be able to exist without fear of harassment or abuse. You can help make that a reality. Text SAFE, S-A-F-E, to 20222 to give $10 and support women, girls, and gender diverse people throughout Canada. Small actions can lead to big changes. We appreciate your support.